Today's episode is Persona 4 Golden. Is it the best RPG ever made, or just another PlayStation Vita game? Find out now.
High school. Why? Why is high school?
You know, because one thing somebody in their 30s needs to do is relive their entire high school years. And that's what we decided to do in Persona 4 Golden, is go back to high school and try to make friends and try to live the life that we didn't live, apparently.
You and I met in high school.
Yes, we did.
And no one ever was murdered in high school, but there's a lot of murder happening in this game.
Oh, yeah.
So main character of Persona 4, they're just called Hero in the super badass opening. Top video game openings of all time. Is this in the top 10 or top 5?
This is definitely in the top 5.
The top 5.
Yeah, this is definitely a top 5. It is a jam. It slaps and it just gets you ready, cuz like you're just like, I just want to get into this world. I want to know what's expected. I want to know what is going on. It gives you like a little bit of a summary, plus it also gives you some like in-game credits and stuff like that too. So I was like, "Nice. Thank you." We don't get to see that too often at the beginning of the game.
He's called Hero in the credits, but do you know what the main character's canon name is?
I do not.
It is Yu Narukami, which I think is pretty clever that the main character's name is Yu because it's the player avatar.
Right.
They're called that specifically, I found, in Persona 4 the Animation. They made an anime retelling of this game, which I meant to try to watch before we recorded today, but it's so fucking hard to get. The Blu-ray set costs $400 because it's out of print.
Right.
But you show up and you're going to crash with your uncle for a year because your parents are out of the country with their job. What kind of job could you possibly have where you're going to leave a country for a year and not take your kid with you? What do you think?
Deuces.
What do you think his parents did?
I mean, it has to be something illegal.
Right away. Criminals.
100%.
Ryotaro Dojima and his daughter Nanako, first characters you meet.
Yep.
Your uncle and your cousin. And your relationship with them is just the start of the incredible character work in this game, Josh.
Yes.
The main plot of the game is people in the small town start showing up dead, and you and the group of friends that you make start trying to solve the mystery because some of the new friends you make get caught up in this web of, you know, evil and murder. But it's meeting the characters and getting to know their backgrounds and lives that sell this game. Like, that's the real main event here. Let's just talk about it. Josh, what are your favorite characters in this game and storylines? I want to just get into this with you.
I liked Rize. I'm sorry. When it comes to pronouncing Japanese names, I am terrible.
Rize Kujikawa.
Yep. She was like a giant pop star in Japan. And the fact that she was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to be like a normal person again. And like just her transitioning to it, where there's some great things and great character building pieces where she's struggling with that. I'm famous still, but I don't want to be famous. I want to be just like you guys, or I want to be normal. And her trying to handle both sides of that personality. I thought it was greatly handled. And it led up to an amazing scene about halfway, 75% of the way through the game, where she has to perform a concert, and it is one of the most enjoyable moments of the game, I think, personally.
Absolutely. Rize is helping Yusuke, one other of this gaggle of great friends. His family store needs an act for a big festival. She's a pop star.
Well, hold on. Don't just say family store. Every day is
great. Every day's great at your June's. Yep. If this so far sounds really stream of conscious, we're just going to tell you straight up. If you haven't played Persona 4 and you're listening to this, you should play it.
Yeah.
Continue listening as you like, but we're spoiling the shit out of everything and talking about it because it's just such a great game.
Yeah.
How many hours did you have when you beat this?
The full thing, it was around like 90 hours.
90 hours. Yeah. Damn. When I beat it, when I completed it the first time, 36.
Okay.
When I completed it the second time, I was up into the high 40s. But I'm not at the true ending yet, so who knows how much further in this will go.
Right.
But that's just it. Every minute invested, I think, absolutely worth it. Everything you said about Rize's storyline is fantastic.
Naoto, the detective prince of it was a protege. It was this big this person who's going to take over and pretty much hailed as like one of the greatest detectives over in Japan right now. And I really like their story and how involved that they were with the murder cases and how it kind of twists into their own palace mixed in with your group and how everything worked that way too. I thought that they were a great addition to the cast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Naoto, like Reese, like everybody else you meet in this town, they all have really interesting and like three-dimensional personalities and conflict. And the game just kind of puts their conflict front and center through its JRPG exploration and combat systems. So you, as in you, your character,
yeah,
they discover that they can pass into TVs. They put their hand on it, their arms go there, whoa, what? But when they enter these TVs, they're entering the world of the Midnight Channel.
Yes.
Which is this kind of mirror, funhouse, dark mirror world of the small town of Aniba.
And how awesome of a name is that?
The Midnight Channel?
Yeah.
Oh, it just fucking rules, absolutely. People are getting thrown into the TV, and they appear on the Midnight Channel, but they appear as like versions of themselves that kind of reflect their repressed emotional problems.
Right, their inner personality.
Mm-hmm. And as you and his friends go through the dungeons within the Midnight Channel, they're saving the people who are about to be killed by the killer of this game, the murderer,
mm-hmm.
who's throwing them into the channel. They save them by getting them to confront these repressed emotions and accept them. You know, it's not this is like just a mood you're going through. You'll get over it. It's like you say with Reese. Reese's personality on the TV is like this exhibitionist who is like, I'm just going to show my body off for everybody.
Right.
But as you get to know Reese, you find out that like she was bullied when she was younger. But when she became a pop star, everybody respected her. So she sees her body image and her fame as like the thing that saved her from bullying. But it got so toxic that she's like, well, the only way people are going to keep appreciating me, I guess I have to like get naked on TV. That's how they'll continue to love me.
Right.
And she accepts that that's a fear that she has, but she acknowledges that's not what I want to do. And as you said, she doesn't want to be famous anymore. She wants to live the quiet small town life.
Yeah.
Naoto, they are secretly a girl, but they dress as a boy. They present as a boy because they want to take over, as you said, their family legacy of being detectives, but they're already not taken seriously by a lot of the police because they're a teenager. And on top of that, like, they would probably treat me worse because it's such a boys club at the police department, you know?
Right.
They struggle with that. And it's just, again, really interesting characters.
Yeah. I think it was great to see, you know, even in this game here, though, because you don't get to see it too much in video games or in this type of media where, you know, we talk about Naoto stuff where it's like, it was more of a transitional story, like a transgender story that you're seeing developed with this character and the inner conflict that they're having with the real world, plus their inner monologue as well. And the same thing goes for another character in the game where they are experiencing their inner feelings towards the opposite sex as well, too.
Kanji?
Yes. And, you know, when you go into their palace in the game or their dungeon or whatever you want to call it, like it is very sensual in a male to male type of format. And it's one of those things that you can tell that like they were still conflicted with it. But I think the game did a really good job at handling these stories in a way that are relatable to people that also show how they're feeling on the inside.
I get you completely. Yeah. Yeah. Kanji struggling with his orientation. I would say I feel like this game settles on the notion that Kanji's bisexual. Well, the reason I say bisexual is because like as you get to know Kanji and as he enters the friend group and things play out, he clearly has a crush on Naoto. And it's playing with this whole thing of like Naoto presents as a male, but Naoto is a woman just like by birth. And so I feel like they're doing this thing where like Kanji finds a kind of medium, like a middle ground in that. But Kanji's conscious that Naoto is a woman, so it's like, but still attracted to men. That's why I was assuming bisexual. Did you think Kanji was presented as like gay?
At first, yes. You know, at first, but once you start to see their relationship happen together, it does show that there is some sort of feelings there, even after they find out, you know, the whole backstory of Naoto, right? Mm-hmm. There still are some feelings between the two of them or just between one of them because Naoto really doesn't express those type of emotions or anything like that to anybody.
I don't have a good understanding of how LGBTQ people are seen in Japanese culture. And this is also a 15-year-old game. The base version of this is a 15-year-old game.
Yeah.
So I would actually, I would love to have a conversation with any friends or fans of this game who identify as LGBTQ and maybe know a bit about the culture over there and how they perceive it. Because there are a few moments where even though they accept kanji and, you know, they're all best friends with them, Yusuke can get a bit like, what are you doing? Like, no homo, bro. That, you know, but like,
yeah,
it's Yusuke's character. I'm not gonna lie. Yusuke's kind of my least favorite character of the group. He's kind of a little fuckboy in a way that I don't like, but you know, there are some degrees of it where it's like a little like, you did such a good job. Why are you dropping these little like mean spirited or cringe moments in here? But otherwise, you know, I found it overall refreshing in a game.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of Yusuke. I wasn't a huge fan of Yusuke overall. As I always see them in these type of games, it is the yellow character, right? We played Neon White, right?
Neon White, right?
And the character who's all dressed up in yellow is the same exact idea. It's the same exact type of personality. I'm playing Persona 5 right now, and the first person you meet wears a yellow shirt and has like all yellow clothing and stuff like that, and they have the same type of personality. And it is just one of those, I'm just really stupid, or I'm gonna say the most obvious, I'm gonna be super clumsy.
I'm clumsy and horny and right, like, okay,
it is annoying.
I have a question. Did you play this in English or Japanese?
I played this in English.
Okay, I played this in Japanese.
Okay.
I intend to play with English for the New Game Plus. Tell me what you thought of the voice dub.
I thought it was fine. Okay. I thought it was great. I mean, we had, you know, great voice actors in there. Troy Baker's one of the characters in the game as well, too.
That's terrific.
Yeah,
Who does Troy Baker play?
Kanji.
that fits. I like that.
I think they all nailed their characters in the way that they're supposed to be performing and stuff like that. But, man, I think...
Tomboy, loves action movies.
Yep. Super, super upbeat and very like aggressive and stuff like that. And I think for the social links and stuff like that, I wasn't attached to that type of character. And it wasn't like, oh, I hated this person or anything like that. It's just like every time I had to talk to them, it was just like, we're gonna be talking about stuff that I don't care about. We're gonna be doing stuff that I don't really care about. Like it was a very big, like, I don't want to say turn off to it, but it was one of those things that it didn't click with me the way that all the other characters did and what all the other characters were going through. Her story just kind of was bland.
I got you.
Compared to everybody else, it was just kind of bleh.
Yeah. All the characters are good in their own ways, but not all of their social links have, like, Chi is a really great character in the main narrative and I liked her and what she brought to that. I can see what you're saying. Her individual focus storyline wasn't for you. Kanji's individual focus storyline wasn't entirely for me, where he's seeing a boy in town being picked on for having hobbies that are kind of like feminine. And that's what kind of led to Kanji having repressed emotions, because Kanji was into knitting and stuff, despite looking like this tough bad boy. So he sees a little kid being picked on and he's trying to help him. I liked what it was. I appreciated it for what it was, but I just kind of wasn't interested in watching that storyline play out. And that was just like that example for me. You know what I mean? Like,
I did like Yukiko. I think she was great. I thought she was just a very, you're charming. The red colored character in these type of games, very similar to Neon White, your red color character was more of like the original love interest type person, where she is introduced very similar to Persona 5 as well. Your first female character is dressed all in red, but like she is the one that has the red colors, but she is like the first, I would say, female that kind of sparks the interest that there are romantic options in the game. I feel like the conversations, they were more deep and meaningful with Yukiko than they were with anybody else leading up to at that time, once you first introduce yourself to her. But Yukiko is helping her family business, I believe was the whole.
Yep, they run the local Inaba Inn, and she's slated to be the next generation of the family that runs it, and she's conflicted about that.
Right.
And I liked her storyline because I mean, you and I can relate to not wanting to end up in the small town where we came from.
Yep.
And so I really like that. And what's interesting is that as you hang out with Yukiko and she goes through the drama of, like, she's like, I'm going to start taking like my tests to get certified and get a job in the city and stuff.
Yeah.
And as she goes through the ups and downs of that, she gets actually a new appreciation for what her family business is. And she decides, no, I'm going to stay and I'm going to run the inn, but I'm going to do it my way. The next generation is going to be something that I have control of. I'm not just going to keep the current, like, you know, standards running into the future. I have ideas. So she finds like a new lease on life and a new lease on like her future, which I enjoyed.
And then you had Teddy.
Oh my. I mean, couple other. Well, I guess we're talking main ensemble.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Teddy, my boy. Well, you know, to a degree, because here's the thing. I love Teddy. And then Teddy, you meet him in the Midnight Channel. He's mm-hmm. this big, almost like mascot. He's
bear.
Like he's a bear. And he makes bear puns. He's very funny.
Yeah. Yep.
But then he wants to know what the real world's like. So he comes out of the TV and you're kind of like, oh, there's just going to be a bear walking around town the rest of the
he's
game.
He's so
huh?
beautiful.
Nope. What does he do?
He's beautiful. He becomes a human. He's a real person.
He grows a body inside of his suit and whoop, I'm a beautiful teenage boy. Whoops.
Oh dear. So let me just first off by saying I found Teddy rather annoying. I think
when Teddy comes into the real world, cancel Teddy. Hashtag cancel Teddy. That's what I'm gonna say. But yeah, keep going.
I just think Teddy's character was just very annoying. I understand it was used as the outside pair of eyes to explain the worlds, to explain the functions, to explain everything in the game. But I was just like, every time Teddy was happening, I was like, please stop. Like, I really don't want to have to hang out with Teddy or do anything with Teddy. Or bear Teddy was fine. After human Teddy, not so much.
Kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I know he's there for comedy, but all of his comedy centers around making passes at all the female characters, hitting on them.
Yeah.
When you go to the beach at the end of the summer, he's like, oh, I didn't mean to accidentally untie your bikini. Hee hee.
Yeah, and, right. Yeah, right.
It's like hashtag cancel Teddy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's there is a funny moment though, where they all bail on Teddy when they're on the class trip. I think it's Yusuke. He says, farewell, Teddy. We shall leave you here along with our memories of our youth. just, you should have just left him. He's a member of the ensemble.
Yep.
And his whole storyline, like you said, it's the whole he's a fish out of water. He's like, yeah. What's the real world? What is friendship? What is my purpose?
But let me explain every aspect of this game. He's your tutorial. He's your guide, pretty much.
And he's kind of like your battle commentator as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the actual gameplay of the game for a second.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in the real world, you're kind of just walking around areas, talking to NPCs, and getting through the beats of the story. And this runs on like a day and night system that proceeds forward. You start in April and you go a full year in game.
Right.
Depending on how you do certain things.
Correct.
And when you are in the Midnight Channel, that's the kind of action RPG dungeon crawling part of
yes.
the game. What did you think about combat and exploration of the Midnight Channel, Josh?
So exploration was kind of a little tedious at times. I know it was... It the way that it's set up, it is to be randomized dungeons and the layouts and stuff like along those lines. I felt like they all kind of started to kind of bleed into each other. If you were like, hey, do you remember this one particular thing that happened in the dungeons? Like, no, it was probably another one that we ended up going into because like they all really clashed together. There wasn't really anything other than the aesthetics of the dungeons mm-hmm. that really separated them from each other, I personally think.
No, you're right. I agree.
However, the combat style, I really liked it. I think it was pretty simplistic turn-based combat. The use of the personas were great. The additions to, you know, doing the all-out attacks where if you knocked people down, everybody can jump on top of them and beat them up. Or if you hit their weakness, you can actually attack again. And it was so creative, I think, in bringing a breath of fresh air to what a lot of people know about turn-based RPG games.
I agree what you said about the dungeon design. I get that they're procedurally generated and all that, mm-hmm. but the dungeons reached a point of not being enjoyable at all, in my opinion. Where so like when halfway through the game, when Teddy enters the real world, his role changes a bit because he can become party equipable if you choose. Rees kind of takes over as your dungeon commentator and guide.
Yep.
I kind of was baffled when in a good way, but like when Rees takes over, she gives you tips on like enemy weaknesses. And I was like, this is so much better, because Teddy would just be like, oh, good luck. Oh, wow. Watch out.
Yeah.
But he wouldn't add anything of value. But Reese,
she was the girl in the chair.
She was the analyst. She was Oracle. Yeah. So what I'm just trying to say is that like I was getting really sick of the dungeons. And then when you get Reese, she triggers this function on the mini map where stars appear over rooms that have treasure chests, right?
Yep.
So I basically just started using that as a way to speed run through the dungeons, being like, I know I don't got to go through that door because it doesn't lead to the next floor of the dungeon.
Right.
And I was just like, I was bailing on treasure chests and stuff. But what I'm saying is that it sucks that the dungeons are so bad because the combat is very fun, but I didn't want to explore. And so I was kind of like skipping fights.
Mm-hmm.
I would take on fights where I knew I needed to level up. But if I was like, oh, I'm not going to stop and fight that shadow, that monster, because I'll be in here longer.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to freaking do it.
100%.
So, yeah, that sucked. But this game's kind of concept of using personas, which all the characters get after kind of confronting their true selves in these story events that we were talking about. Like, you know, with Kanji confronting his sexual orientation.
Yep.
Naoto confronting how they present. And it's kind of like, it's funny. It's like basically tarot Pokemon. I'm an idiot. I should have asked my wife more questions because she's actually into tarot cards and stuff.
Okay.
But like tarot cards and the kind of concepts they embody get matched up with characters in this.
Yes.
Your cousin, Nanako, she embodies the justice tarot card type.
Yeah, you have the Fool, the Magician, the Priestess, the Empress, Lovers, Justice, the Hermit, Fortune, Strength, Death, Devil, Star, Moon, Sun, Judgment, and et cetera, et cetera.
And et cetera. Yes, that type. But yeah, and then these monsters or creatures associated with each type can be found in dungeons and added to your team, and then you use their powers in the fights and stuff.
Right.
I was on a principality for most of the game.
Okay.
And I really liked it. My kind of strategy, I would spend the first turn just with stat buffs. I would lower enemy defense. I would up everybody's criticals. And then I would immediately go into using magic to find weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a nice spread. Like, main character. So this is my party. Like,
yeah.
Basically the whole game. It was you. It was Chi. It was Yukiko. And it was Yusuke for a little bit, but I replaced him with Kanji. So
okay.
My endgame party ended up being Yu, Chi, Yukiko, and Kanji. Because they had a nice spread of fire, electric, wind, ice, light, and dark.
Okay.
So that's what I used to kind of get through weaknesses. What about you? What was your party?
I did a big mixture of them. The only one I never really used was Teddy. But I did have, like you were saying, I didn't really go in for more of a technical side of things. I usually go in when we play Pokemon and stuff like that. I'm going to hit you. And that's all I care about. I don't really care about the stat buffs unless it's like sleep or dizziness or anything along those lines, because I was more like, I want to go in there and just hit you as hard as I possibly could. And with my persona, the biggest persona that I was using for the longest time was the White Rider, which was focused on the death side of the tarot cards and stuff like that. So I focused mainly on using that particular persona. I also did use I have a whole list of them here. I'm sorry. I'm going through all of them just to kind of see. But I did use the Djinn a lot. The Matador was great too. Gabriel was awesome. There's just so many personas, and I didn't get all of them, of course, but there's so much, because you can fuse your personas to make them even more powerful. You can take particular attacks from those ones that you fused and add them onto new ones. And it's like you said, it is similar to Pokemon in that aspect, but it's not, these characters are tied to one particular type. You can have a persona that has, you know, four or five different types of stat abilities to them if they really want it. You can have fire, ice, death, and wind if you need to. And I really like that, because it let you customize it your own way, which shows that your personas are tied to you. This is your persona. So this is how you see yourself and how you want to attack the world or attack the enemies and stuff like that. And I thought that was great.
I 100% agree. And I agree with, like, I mean, I played Pokemon very similar way. The stat buffs, I felt like, though, in this game, were kind of required, especially for some bosses.
Some bosses, yes.
There were some that like I really had to carefully plan out how I was going about it.
Yes.
The persona form of Namatame, which you fight in the Heaven Dungeon with the big old gears on top of his head. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, the hardest boss in the game.
Yes, 100%.
He has this round of stat boosts for himself where he will randomly prioritize a certain form of magic for himself, but for you it's weaker, but it doesn't tell you, and you kind of have to play guessing games with it. And then he has a round where he takes control of everybody in the party except you, and you gotta hope they don't kill you.
Right.
Like, if you make your party too good,
yeah,
which I did, they will kill you. And so, yeah, stat buffs, stat nerfs became very, very important. Getting back into the narrative side of things, as you're making friends and saving them and trying to figure out why people are being sucked into this TV and dying, you're doing the day-to-day of your actual life, which mm-hmm. are the individual storylines that we're talking about.
Yep. One thing I thought that this game did great was let you live a year in this person's shoes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a point in time where I had to pull up my calendar and say, okay, well, I'm working on this day. I have gym, or I have music class this day, or I have to go play basketball on this particular day, or there's so many different things that you're doing. And at the same time, you also have to remember, okay, well, let me take a look at the weather, because it's raining this day, and in a couple of days it's going to get really foggy here because of this rain. That means I need to get to the Midnight Channel beforehand mm-hmm. to be able to solve this murder. And there's so many different things, and like, you are actually living a second life when you're playing this game. And I think that that was just so unique and so different. And like, this is coming from someone who did not play Persona 3 at the time.
This is my first one as well.
I did not play any of the Shin Megami Tensei games, and I know that this is the offshoot of that series, but I thought that this was a great introduction for people to jump into this world.
100%. And yeah, those little nitty gritty life details are really cool. So you just kind of, I was going to ask you, if you could tell me. So you joined the music club and played basketball?
Yes.
Okay. I joined the drama club and played basketball.
Okay.
I didn't personally find the basketball friend storylines to that we're talking about social links that we didn't care for.
Yeah.
The whole, like, he comes from a rich kind of upper class family and they see sports as pointless, but he likes sports.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, cool. Music club. Who do you meet in there? Because I didn't play it, so
there
I don't know.
Was
what's the storyline?
Hold on, because I stopped it halfway through because the girl that you meet in there, she was just too annoying for me.
Okay.
But she was this young girl. I think she was a first year, but she was like a musical prodigy and stuff like that. But she was like asking me to help her out and stuff like that. Oh my God, I really wish I knew her name and stuff like that. But I attended music class a couple times, and just to kind of build up, you know, my proficiencies in stuff. It wasn't really more for the social links that I cared about. I kind of set that one off to the side to focus mm-hmm. on everything else, because at the core of everything, there is a murder happening in this town. And that, you got to get to the point of that. You got to get to the nitty gritty of this and who is doing these things, because people are dying in very mysterious and creative, confusing ways.
Sure, sure. I'll just say drama has a very good social link storyline. You meet Yumi Ozawa, and she's, it's kind of almost a little similar to what you were saying about the music. She's like an acting prodigy, really good, wants to be an actor. But then she has a family crisis where her dad, who like went out for cigarettes years ago and never came back.
Right.
Know,
okay.
He comes back into her and her mom's life with a terminal illness and wants to reconnect.
Right.
And her mom's willing to forgive him, but she's not. And you help her with the kind of stress and drama of that. And then she eventually becomes a possible romantic link. But I had to turn her down because I was already dating somebody. Josh,
no.
Here's the question.
Yes.
Who we dating? Who we dating? On the count of three.
Okay. Right,
ready?
Yeah.
One, two, three.
Reese.
Yukiko. Oh, okay. All right. So tell me about why you made that choice.
I loved her. She was a great character. I loved her backstory. I thought she was. Hi, Oz. Come on up.
Cat on the podcast.
There you go. Yeah. I think
Ozzy,
that her quest line and her story and who she was and what she wanted to accomplish and stuff like that in life is like, this is somebody I would like to see myself with. I thought she was a great character, and I thought she was a great romantic interest. So I pursued down that path, and I know canon wise it is the correct path to take.
So why? What do you mean by can't? Like, what? Tell me how you came to that conclusion. What that means?
So in all of the continuations of Persona 4's story, she is your romantic interest pretty much throughout all of them.
Gotcha.
Is from what I've seen.
And those are spin-off games that I haven't played yet, but there's a fighting one.
Yep.
There's a rhythm one.
Yep. I actually have, I think I have both of them over there.
Nice.
In my
nice.
Collection right now. I do have the rhythm game for the Vita, so I would have to actually break out my Vita again to play that. But yeah, I mean, okay. That's who I chose. Why'd you go with Yukiko?
I think it plays into something that you said earlier. It's the fact that she's the first romantic option that they kind of put in front of you. And it was a little bit of like, I've already taken a bunch of the steps already, but she had a really good storyline. Like mm-hmm. I said, I related to her wants as a character, and she had a good personality. And also just like, you got to date the healer. You know what I mean? Like, I can't kick, like, honestly, she's the best character for healing in terms of the JRPG. I'm like, I can't break her heart. I got to keep her on my good side. But no, on New Game Plus, I'm going to honestly try to like do different ones to see where those take you. I'm kind of upset you can't date any of the guys. I feel like that's limiting in that sense. Does Persona 5 change that, or is it?
I don't know yet. I haven't really gotten into the relationship side of things. I only have really one person right now, and I have a couple of them in Persona 5, I guess I would say right now, that are like teetering in that, like, we're being playful, flirty, but it's not happening yet. But like you were saying in the social links, once you get to a certain point in those links, you are pretty much given a option and a choice. And it's like, do you want to go down this path of a romantic interest, or do you want to friend zone them?
Yeah, and it's actually like, it was honestly heartbreaking when I had to friend zone a couple of people.
I friend zoned Yukiko right off the bat. And I was like, there just might be a better option down the road. Like, how do I know this? Like,
friend zoning Yumi was really rough at the end of her storyline, because just like for sport, like, her dad dies, but she accepts him like back into her heart right before he passes. And then she basically is like, I feel really close to you from all the help you've given me. Like, what would you say? And what she does is like, she's like, listen, I'm just going to turn my back. If you want to date me, give me a hug or something. But if you leave the room, I will respect it. And I left. I was like, shit, I'm really sorry. You've been through hell. I can't date you. It does give you the option. What I was going to say is like, if you're dating somebody and you get to that point, it says, but you're already in a committed relationship. I'm presuming you can do multiple relationships.
I believe you can. I haven't done that. I'm sorry. I'm faithful.
Yeah. I mean, also, but also I was afraid of like some kind of like negative impact, like honestly, like in combat or in story or something.
Right.
So I was like, cause what I noticed, tell me if this specifically happened. There are certain moments with Yukiko for me that were playing out in the main narrative, but like they seem to put extra emphasis on like Yukiko gave you a look, or, the scene where her and Reese think they're drunk, and they play this little game of like hug somebody or kiss them on the cheek. It's like Yukiko hug you, but you notice it was a tighter hug. You know what I mean?
Right. So I'm yeah.
Like, did things like that happen for you with Reese?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that's
100%. Yep.
Okay. So that's what I mean. I was worried about, if I break Yukiko's heart, is it going to change something in the narrative? I couldn't do it.
But yeah, my thing here is, as Reese Kajikawa, very close bond holds you to your girlfriend, right? Reese.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. That's because I have the lovers thing there. Yeah. I don't know. I thought there was a lot of great and unexpected relationships that you had in the game. Like, I had a relationship with a fox. Like, I don't know if you did that at all. The whole quest line.
Relationship meaning friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, like the social, the social status stuff. But like, there was the old lady.
Basically death.
Yep. There was the nurse, which we can talk about once we get into our jobs that we had. There was the prissy popular girl in school.
The basketball manager, I.
Yeah. She had a whole really, her story was actually really good too, from what I had.
I didn't get into it because I just didn't like her personality.
I don't want to spoil it for you. All right,
well.
Anya, Matsunaga. She was the one that was in the band practice that was helping you with all the musical stuff and whatnot. Okay. So it was, I think her side of the story, I was just like, nah, that's the only one I really didn't want to venture down much anymore. But we talk about the day in the life of your person. We talk about there's a murder happening.
We keep getting off the murder.
I know. There is a murder happening. But before we dive into the full actual murder story, jobs. You have to work too. How else are you going to get money to be able to afford your medicine and your abilities and your weapons and all these type of things in the game if you can't afford them? And there's so many different types of jobs you can do in this game. You can tutor people. You can do like calligraphy, like writing stuff is another option. You can work for, I think there was like a post office job that you could do too. Mm. But there was seriously what, like 8 to 12 jobs, I think, that you have access to actually do. Yes. But some of these jobs have additional story content for them. Mm-hmm. And I believe, after talking, Tom, me and you have chosen one of the jobs unexpectedly with the outcome that we got. We chose to work at the hospital.
I chose to work. So every job I picked was specifically to get certain character traits up. Mm-hmm. Very early in the game, I found that like I couldn't do certain conversational prompts without higher courage. Mm-hmm. So I immediately took whatever job line I could to get that up. And the hospital is like a high courage boost.
Yes.
So I get it. And it's one of the most shockingly inappropriate storylines in the
100%. Yes.
You is in you. The character. It's so funny now that I know that his name is you. But you gets a part time cleaning job at a hospital and he's supervised by a nurse who, despite being 10 years older than him and he's in high school, sexually assaults him. She like, you know, it starts hitting on him, but then there's implied moments of her like touching him and stuff.
Yep.
And then they try to turn it into like, oh, she's just a workaholic who like was bullied out of her previous job and she's going through a lot. And I'm like, but she's, and there's a point where like, as you get to know her better, she starts acting more professional and
yes,
she stops doing the illegal thing she was yes, doing. But it's like, but you put this out here already, like game, you can't run away from
right,
this. And you told me there's some highly, highly like shocking stuff in Persona 5, right?
Yes. Persona 4 and 5, like there's a tonal difference to it.
Yeah.
Persona 5 is a very dark story. Persona 4 is very bright. It is very colorful. There are times where the game's, it is a murder mystery still, but there are times where the game itself is like fun to be in that world. Like
yeah,
no matter how terrible things are happening around them, it's still enjoyable to go on the daily lives of these people.
Yeah, like I'm never shocked enough to walk away from the good parts of it. It's just there's some culture shock stuff. Like I watched an anime over the course of the pandemic called Fruits Basket, and just long story short, there's a component where a character, a female character, is involved with somebody who is older than them, but she's a high school student and he's an adult, but it's not like it's like maybe a 6-year gap. It's still a gap, and in America that's just looked at right away as like, we like, you know, warning, what are you doing?
Right.
It led to like I was having conversations with people at Fruits Basket. I'm like, isn't that fucked up? And they're like, well, over there it's not like the line doesn't exist, but they have different definitions of what constitutes relationships and stuff. And I'm like, well, it's weird,
right?
So yeah, I don't know, I guess I'm not gonna paint an entire country by my standards, but you know, when the nurse started groping you and stuff, I was like, whoa, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
why is this being played for laughs?
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah. I don't even know how
how do we pivot out of this?
Yeah, how do you get out of that? So there was a murder, right?
Well, the police are baffled because they don't know about the Midnight Channel. They don't understand it. And you guys do, because
mm-hmm,
you're saving people from the Midnight Channel. But your uncle, Dojima, does get suspicious of you. And I actually kind of like that as a plot point, where he's not just like a doofus. He legit like he kind of questions you in a way. It's like, are you killing these people? Like, no one died before you showed up in town.
Yeah.
Every time someone disappears and then comes back, they enter your friend group. What are you doing? You know, I was like, wow, game.
You're thinking outside the box a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, and I thought that was really good. I thought, you know, the Dojima family was great. I loved having a relationship with the daughter. I thought she was great. Like, just seeing, she's pretty much seeing you as an older brother, and you're there, you know, coloring or watching TV,
tutoring
or
her,
taking her out with your friend group and hanging out with them. They loved her. You know, she loved them. And, like, there were so many great things of building this world. And like I said, there was so much good that was happening and that you were bringing to it, but there was still a murder happening. Like,
well, this all kind of culminates. I think this is the best way to get to where we're going. You become a surrogate family with your uncle and your cousin. You know, they've kind of been living in a broken home for years because the wife slash mother died in a hit and run accident. Mm-hmm. And that left him kind of alienated and her lonely. So the case comes to a head where, like, you and the group kind of realize that this one individual, his name's Namatame, he was having an affair with the first woman who was killed in the game, right?
Yes.
You find out that he's the one who has been kidnapping people and throwing them into the TV world, and this kind of gets discovered right at a moment where he kidnaps your cousin Nanako,
yep,
and takes her into the TV world. And it's this moment where, like, your uncle's freaking out because he's just like, oh no, like, she's been kidnapped, and you're trying to be like, wait, he goes, what's going on, like, you know, what is your involvement? And I picked the options, like, tell him about the Midnight Channel. And so it's like the text box, like, you explain, and he goes, this isn't funny, like, stop it, you know?
Yeah.
You and your friends, kind of, like, independent of your uncle, you go into the TV world, you confront Namatame, who has Nanako, and he keeps saying, like, I'm saving her. Like, he's clearly, like, deranged or something, as far as you're concerned.
Yes.
So you defeat him, you escape from the Midnight Channel, but Nanako is not doing great. Unlike everybody else, she is not recovering from being in there. And additionally, this thick fog that kind of always existed within the Midnight Channel's world is now, like, blanketing the town.
Yeah, coming out into the world.
And it's driving people a little crazy. Not that it's, like, it's just, like, the presence of it is, like just breaking people's minds, you know, in a way. It comes to a head on December 3rd. You're at the hospital. Nanako is not doing great.
Yep.
And she dies. And I was floored.
Yeah.
Because, as you said, getting to know her, completing her storyline, and I was like, this kid's like 7, and mm-hmm. the game let her die.
Yeah.
She dies from, like, the injuries she sustained in the Midnight Channel, and then you and your friends, you go up to the hospital room where Namatame, the culprit, is being held, and you sneak in, and he's trying to jump out the window. And so you're at this pivotal moment. Yusuke is kind of like, fuck this guy. He killed Nanako. They see a TV in the room. His, like, evil shadow version appears in the TV and says, like, you know, I didn't save her, but it doesn't matter. They can't do anything. They can't prove anything. The cops don't know about this world. And Yusuke's kind of like, let's just throw this guy in the TV and let him get killed by the monsters in there. And the friend group kind of, they all, like, consider it. So, Josh, on your first playthrough, mm-hmm. what did you do when you're presented with this option of, you know, sparing Namatame or allowing the friend group to kill him or participating in it? What did you do?
I did not do that. I didn't want to, like, it wasn't what I was doing and trying to accomplish throughout the entire game. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to, we were doing this for good. Why would we go ahead right now at this exact moment and flip that switch? Like,
well, that's the thing. They hang Nanako's death over that moment. It's very emotionally charged.
Yes.
Now, I also did not do it. I argued for the group to spare him. I finished the game on December 3rd.
Okay.
And I'll explain how. I don't know if you know why that happened, because you told me you finished this game in January.
Yeah.
So I spared him, and I went through some dialogue prompts where they were like, explain why we should spare him. And then they kind of were like, all right, we don't really want to, but we'll spare him. And then you go back down to Nanako's room, and her heartbeat had come back. Like, she was resuscitated. And I was like, oh, interesting. It was kind of like like, the game was literally presenting it as a moral choice. Like, if you had chosen to kill him, you would have come downstairs and be like, oh no, I took revenge on a man for a crime that he technically didn't commit, because Nanako's fine. You know, everyone's relieved. And then the game jumped from December to March. And the ending of the game is basically like, you go back to your hometown. The fog is still enveloping Inaba. It never went away. Nanako is still alive, but she's still hospitalized. Like, she's been messed up for all these months.
Right.
And Namatame's just never been really able to be put on trial, because even though they caught him, like, they caught him for kidnapping, but they can't pin the murders on him.
Right.
So you leave your friends at the train station, and it's kind of like this sense of like, well, we did something, but not enough. And I was like, all right, this is a bad ending. And it is one of the bad endings mm-hmm. you can get. So that was the first time I finished this game.
Okay.
So take me through your moment of December 3rd. You said you spared him, but then what happened from there?
With mine, it was the dialogue options. I was given the choice. I went, but with my thing, she got released from the hospital. Like, she was good to go. Like, there wasn't any problems. But then we met up at Juness and we continued something, and there was an additional boss fight that we had.
Because you basically have to convince your friends. How did Namatami know to do the, like that's what I didn't
right.
do. I didn't like I got them to spare him, but I didn't really connect the dots mm-hmm. the first time. And you clearly did, because you pushed them to reconsider all the evidence and be like, what does this mean? In doing so, Josh.
It was that was pretty much you bringing in your detectiveness, your detective work throughout the entire game, too. But you know, doing that, you pretty much go and have to fight the big bad now.
And like, the big bad is the result of the true killer, who is somebody we didn't actually talk about yet, but go ahead. Who is
he? He's, whatchamacallit, Dojima's partner.
Adachi.
Yeah.
The assistant detective on the case.
Spoiler alert.
I wrote this down in my notes like halfway through the game. I was like, after I saved it, like, is Adachi the killer? It's the classic office thing. It's like, you're the person I most medium suspect. And,
right.
And it was him. And his whole thing was kind of, because he's an underling, he killed the first victim completely by accident by like pushing them. He got into an argument with them and shoved them, and they fell into the TV and through the TV. And then he started piecing together. He went on like a power trip, kind of like, I can kill people I don't like by throwing them into the TV. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Namatami's whole thing is that he thought by putting people in the TV, he was saving them, because he started piecing together like, I saw somebody on the TV, and then they died a couple days later. So the TV's warning me. If I see somebody, I got to go find them in real life and put them in the TV so they can't be killed.
Right.
But he didn't realize he was playing into Adachi's whole scheme of like getting people killed in the Midnight Channel.
Yeah.
So you beat Adachi. That's game over, right?
Sure.
Okay. True ending time.
Yes. I didn't get to true ending.
You don't know what it is?
I don't know. I did not do the true ending.
Oh, damn. I want to talk about it because... I don't like it.
Is it something? It's something with Shadow Teddy, right? Like, there's a big Shadow Teddy thing, or like, was that later in the
game? It was earlier in the game.
Was it early?
You fight Shadow Teddy.
Okay.
Listen, I'm going to tell you the true ending.
Okay.
Because I think it sucks.
Okay.
The true ending is, after, you know, Adachi has been defeated and it's resolved that he was behind the crime.
Mm-hmm.
You're at the store again with your friends, and there's another kind of line of questioning. It's like, wait a minute, how did Adachi get these powers to shove people in? Like, they reinvestigated again. So you find out that the true puppet master of Persona 4
mm-hmm.
is a goddess in the folklore of Japan called Izanami. They're mentioned in one of the like history lessons you have during the school year, where, you know, you have to answer questions and take tests.
Yep.
And it's just brought up very briefly. They're a goddess that's involved in like the creation mythology of Japan. And basically, the goddess wanted to test what humans desire. So she created the Midnight Channel and gave certain people the ability to enter it, and decided to like watch what the humans did with these powers to learn about humans and what they want. And you met the goddess when he came to town on his first day, because she was the gas station attendant the entire time. When she shook his hand when offering him a part-time job, that put the Midnight Channel powers in his hand. And that's why that night he's able to touch the TV. And so you fight her. And in fighting her, she decides that she shouldn't interfere with humans and like takes like, you know, like spares Inaba from the influence of the Midnight Channel and ends it. And honestly,
kind of boring.
I dislike it completely.
Yeah.
Because it robs a lot of the game of some of its, I don't know, its
charm.
Not just its charm, but like the whole before that, like the presentation is like, this is a game where like through this magical element, there's a lot of like characters facing their true hearts, their true emotions. And it feels very personal in that way.
Yeah.
Like, but then you explain like, oh, it was just a god messing around with everybody.
Yeah.
There's like less, I don't know.
Weight.
Less weight, less free will involved. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. I wrote down What I wrote then is the game's themes about facing your true self and making peace with your personality are great. The final ending doesn't gel with a lot of that. I think the game still works, but like, it's kind of like you weren't choosing to face yourself. You were a pawn in a game of a god to like, you were strung along to do it. You know?
Like, it was like all of this stuff was kind of pre-planned or premeditated. It wasn't, it left. I mean, just you explaining that to me, like it was very lackluster. Like it just seems like we just needed to have another big bad enemy at the end just to, I don't know, give you that big RPG hidden boss type thing that you would get.
Yeah. Like this game has major, major Twin Peaks vibes. I don't know if you've ever seen that show.
I've not, but I can see the referencing.
And just with the notion of like a small town where murders are happening and there's a hidden world of evil and kind of mystic and supernatural stuff underneath it all. It's not like, I'm not saying it's a ripoff. It just kind of has those vibes and it does them very well. But like the things in Twin Peaks, even when they're defined, they're not, there's still like an era of like mystery to it. Like it's not like this is the Black Lodge and it's the root of all evil, but who created the Black Lodge? Well, they don't explain it because it's not important. It's a, you know what I mean? Like it's like what it does to the characters in Twin Peaks and everything is more interesting. That's what I'm saying. Like, I didn't need the Midnight Channel explained.
Yeah.
It's just a supernatural element that's cool. Sometimes you can over-explain something to the point where you actually ruin it. And I kind of think the true ending does that.
Okay. Yeah.
In my opinion.
That makes perfect sense. And, you know, sometimes less is more.
Sorry for spoiling that for you, Josh.
Oh, it's all good. I probably wasn't going to do that true ending anyway. Now, especially now, I won't do that. But...
Yeah.
One thing I did want to ask while we were talking about, you know, the story and all this, what was your favorite dungeon?
Well, it goes back to what I was saying in terms of aesthetics and theming.
The video game one.
The video game is cool. It's cool. Heaven has the best soundtrack, the best like track in the background.
Yes.
The soundtrack slaps.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, 100%.
Video game dungeon and Kanji's bathhouse probably.
The layout kind of sucks. Yeah. I just thought the aesthetic of the video game one had one of the worst boss fights of all time.
The video game one?
Yeah.
Because his 8-bit shell, you had to like hurry up.
Oh, it was so time consuming. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Soundtrack.
So good. It's so good. Like there's so many bangers. And the thing is, like, I have that soundtrack on my phone and like where I'm playing through Persona 5 right now, and my wife's like, don't play this. I need to experience these songs for myself because they're so good. Every single one of them, like every time something happens, it's like, oh, this is gonna be, and it works with the whatever's happening in the world. Like it is perfectly summed up of like, oh, this is spooky music. Oh, this is mysterious music. Oh, this is happy music. But every day is great at your Juness. Don't forget about that.
We talked about the opening, how much of a banger it is. It's also just like, these are all on Xbox Game Pass right now. Mm-hmm. Best deal in gaming. And I pulled up Persona 3 to watch the opening and Persona 5 Royal to watch the opening. I'm going to play them and I'm sure they have great soundtracks, but just like, I was like, it doesn't hit the same way this does.
Yeah.
It just hits different. You know, I like it.
I heard 3 has aged a little roughly because it is a strictly portable game that they made into this, where Persona 4 was a PS2 game, which Persona 4 Golden was like the definitive version of that. They added some extra stuff to it that came out on the Vita, then came out to PC, and now is available pretty much on every console that you can get.
Well, Josh, it's funny you bring up portability. Look right there. You've been using it throughout the episode.
Oh, you mean to tell me that my Steam Deck has the ability to play Persona 4 on it? Yes. Yes. Well, yes, it does. Where do you rank this overall party of JRPG thing? You know, you talk about your group in Dragon Quest 11 Echoes of Elusive Age Definitive Edition, but we talk about Chrono Trigger. You know, you've played Final Fantasy 15 as well too. I've played games like Earthbound and Final Fantasy 6 and 7 and all these other big RPG games too. But like, where do you rank this grouping?
Number one all time with a bullet is the cast of Dragon Quest 11.
Okay,
that is the best ensemble in an RPG. This is a very strong number two.
Wow. Okay.
And you know, I'm actually in my head screaming at myself for putting Chrono Trigger at number three, but I'm not just like, Chrono Trigger is a masterpiece.
Oh, it's a masterpiece of a game. Yeah.
We've covered it on the show here, but I think it's just because this game lets you go the extra mile of connecting with so many different people, and they are all just really well written. It's not a knock against Chrono Trigger. It's just because that is what it is, and it works beautifully. But it is the extra level of interaction that you drive. You know what I mean?
The
dialogue choices that make this one stronger.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think this is definitely a top five ensemble cast. Okay. When it comes to it. I do like the cast of Chrono Trigger, of course. I mean, you could even consider your party from Pokemon to be in that grouping as well, too, because it is, you know, it's your group. I did like the cast of Dragon Quest XI. I thought that they were
echoes.
I thought they were good. I don't know. Like, I do consider them a top five group. As of right now, I think it's really hard because the cast of Persona 4 is so good, but you are looking at two different types of atmospheres when it comes to these groups, where this is a detective group and the other group is a thief group.
In Persona 5.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So it's like this group here is more based around their knowledge of how are we going to solve this mystery, and the other one's like, how are we going to steal this thing from people? And like, it is a really nice heist, like Ocean's 11 type grouping of people. And I like both of them right now. And it's really hard. So let me finish 4-5 and then I'll see how this plays out. But as of right now, they are definitely a top five.
The number four all-time ensemble is Star Fox 64. let's just get that down.
Over on our Discord channel and across all of our podcast platforms and whatnot that we have on social media, we asked some big pivotal questions when it came to Persona 4 Golden. And what were those, Tom?
Yes, we asked what character storyline in Persona 4 Golden was your favorite. And we also asked people to tell us their favorite video game ensembles. Mm-hmm. So Two Hats on Top, a.k.a. Dancing Beetle, answered, Kanji would definitely have to be my favorite character. His social link line is one of my favorites. I also think he serves the bro character role better than Yusuke. Just interrupting his
100%.
Absolutely.
100%.
I liked having him around way more than Yusuke. Not only was he invaluable to the team, but he's just so cool throughout the game. Nanako would probably be a close second. Her rank 4 in her social link, where the game gives you a multiple choice answer to explain death to a 7-year-old, is probably the hardest decision I've had to make in a video game. And yeah, it's a very deep moment.
It is a very deep moment.
Again, we said her mom died, and she's like, people are being murdered. What's death? What's going on? And
yeah.
It's like, ooh.
I don't think I should be the one having this conversation with you right now.
And then Chris from the podcast 1H1D says, Magus in Chrono Trigger. He's basically the Piccolo of that game, and Piccolo rocks.
100%.
100%.
That's actually 200%, because 100% that Magnus is the best in Chrono Trigger, and then 100% that Piccolo is the best in Dragon Ball Z. At the end of the day, skip, play, beat, complete.
Beat, don't complete.
Yep.
I do not see the value in the true ending. I'll get it. I finished this twice. I had my December 3rd failure moment, and then I had, you know, figuring out Itadachi, confronting him and all that. I looked up what the true ending is. Even when I knew Game Plus this, I'm not going to go for it. I don't think it's worth it.
Okay.
What about you?
I think beat as well, with an asterisk of play the additional games. Play the rhythm game, play the fighting game. I believe they're one of them is available on like Xbox and PlayStation and stuff like that right now, which I think is the fighting game. It was like Persona 4 Arena Ultimate Mix or something along those lines.
Okay.
And then you have Persona 4, and I think it's Dancing All Night.
That is the
rhythm game as well, which is available on the Vita if you have a PlayStation.
So
everyone
crack out your Vitas. From the graveyard of portable consoles.
Or you can just find a video on YouTube and just kind of continue on, find out how everything turns out at the end of Persona 4 Golden.
Where else can they find videos on YouTube, Josh?
Oh, they can find videos over at youtube.com/@badelephantgaming.
Wow.
It's so crazy. Right where you're watching this video right now.
You can.
If you're an audio listener, not where you're listening to this right now.
You're
unless you have YouTube Plus.
You're on Spotify right now.
Or Deezer.
We love Deezer. But wherever you are checking us out, thank you very much. And if you could leave us a like, a subscribe, or even tell us your thoughts on Persona in the comments. Do you think we were absolutely wrong, like how Josh got yelled at in our Naughty Dog episode? Do you think we're way off point? Do you have your own opinions on the ending or the characters? Tell us down below. We would love to hear what you think.
Yes. But until next time, This has been Josh Sun.
And I'm Tom Kuhn.
And we will see you in the future.
While we boot up the TriFlex capacitor, please take some time to subscribe to the show and leave us a review wherever you listen. This show is nothing without you, and any support helps.
If you want to connect with us and discuss the past, present, or future of gaming, check out Bad Elephant Gaming on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And don't forget to watch our other videos on YouTube, where we bring you gaming experiences you'll never forget.
We also have a Twitch channel where we play games for the show and for fun. Come chat with us anytime at twitch.tv/badelephantgaming.
Thanks for listening.
And until next time, we'll see you in the future.